97.5, The Fanatic.
Let the big dog hunt. Hello again, everybody. Joe Stazak with you in the house. It's 7 o'clock. I'm here till 10 o'clock tonight. We are less than a week away from draft day 2020. We'll be talking about the draft tonight. A bunch of other things. We have the Michael Jordan documentary coming out tomorrow. I want to do some things with that tomorrow. I'm on 4 to 8 tomorrow. As well, D-Lino, a bang-up job. A lot of good things going on. This is the pandemic sports Armageddon, day 36. How are we holding up out there? I'm hanging in there. I'm watching. What did I watch today? Did my normal prep, watched ESPN. Still, again, I got to take a shot at NBC Sports Philly not having a show on weekends. Showing like poker or some ridiculous Sixers game from like 3 years ago. Not a good effort. Not a good effort. And even when they do a show, they have their people at home in their own houses. Come on, ESPN still works out of a studio. Are you kidding me? You have one anchor. It's not even like there's a dual anchor set. Disappointed. I have a lot of good friends over there, though. They do a bang-up job. Certainly appreciated. I'm looking forward to this draft. I got to be honest. Looking forward to this draft. By the way, Steve Callis coming on 10 after 9 to talk about some things. We have fanless games, potential for fanless games coming up in the next few months. I still believe, and it is with great regret and disappointment that I say this, that there will be no NBA season this year. There will be no NHL season this year. And the NFL will start late. And baseball will obviously start very late, maybe a half a season out of baseball. I think this thing is going to go on for a while until we get a hold of it. And even when we do get a handle on it, we start packing in buildings again, and the thing's going to spread until it's exterminated, until it's, you know, extinguished for the most part, or we come up with a vaccine or some way to take care of folks in mass quantities. We're still going to have the problem. I don't see it disappearing anytime soon. So I know you hear Dr. Fauci talk about the possibility of things playing themselves out, baseball coming back and how to do it, maybe quarantine everyone in Arizona, play games geographically designed and have your separate divisions, and the Yankees and Mets and Phillies will be in one division, and then we'll have neutral site World Series games. I heard A-Rod on Colin Cowherd the other day talking about neutral site World Series games. I think it's ridiculous. It works in the NFL. It won't work in baseball. That's ridiculous. Imagine having a game in a warm city like Tampa Bay, a neutral site game, or Anaheim, having the Yankees and the Cardinals. Who's going to that? Who's going to that mess? The whole thing's a mess. And will continue to be a mess until we get a hold of this thing. And it's unfortunate, but it is what it is. Good draft class. This season, if you are looking for a wide receiver, but I'm here to tell you that I think the Eagles should maybe look in a different direction. I really do. I really believe that. I think, one, they lost two picks in the Darius Slay move, so now they have 8 picks. They need a lot of areas of help. Lots of areas of help. So more picks, the better. To move up in the draft to take one of these, quote, marquee receivers is a risk. You don't know if Denzel Mims is going to be better than Henry Ruggs or Jerry Jeudy, or, you know, Denzel Mims is like 6 on the depth chart. Henry Ruggs is 3rd, Jerry Judy's 1, CeeDee Lamb is 2, depending on whose board you're looking at. Justin Jefferson, I think, would be a good fit here. I don't know if he'll be around at 21. I still think they'll get a good receiver at 21 if they decide to go that route. But I'm here to tell you that I think the Eagles should maybe look in a different direction at 21. I've always been about best player available. Best player available is the way to go. That's how you load your team up with elite talent. When you're not desperately searching for a position. When you're not desperately searching for a position. So they have not done well drafting wide receivers. We know that. Nelson Aguilar, Jordan Matthews. Jordan Matthews was probably the best wide receiver pick in the last 10 years. Nelson Aguilar was a semi-bust. Trying to think who else did they select as a wideout. Matt Collins, bust. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside, bust. I think Henry Ruggs would be a nice fit here because they like to have players to do things after the catch. Yak, yak, yak. Make people miss. Get people in space. Like a Henry Ruggs who runs a 4.27. Ridiculous. That's just ridiculous speed. But I think if there is a linebacker, and I heard Jason Avant talking about this the other day too, and I heard another expert pundit talk about this, and they don't do this very often. In fact, not since 1979 have the Eagles taken a linebacker in the first round, and that was Jerry Robinson. That was a hell of a pick. By the way, that was also at number 21, ironically. But the last two linebackers that they took in the second or third round were playmakers. They did hit on Michael Kendricks, who ended up starting in the Super Bowl, and Jordan Hicks would have started in the Super Bowl had he not been hurt. And that's always been the knock on Jordan Hicks, but he was a playmaker. Still is a playmaker. Third in the league in tackles with the Cardinals last year. Third in the league in tackles. Reason he fell to the third round is because of his injury history. Kenneth Murray, linebacker out of Oklahoma. Don't know if he'll be around at 21. He's that good. Three-year starter, all Big 12, 100 tackles each of the last two seasons, playing inside, has called the defense all 3 years as a freshman, a sophomore, and a junior. He's 6'2", 241, runs a 4.52. 38-inch vertical, team captain, sophomore and junior year. This kid, they have no one at linebacker right now. They got rid of their best linebacker, Nigel Bradham. Kamu Grugier-Hill signed with the Dolphins. They tried to pick up some value picks with Corey Nelson and Zach Brown. They whiffed. They picked up Jatavis Brown this offseason. Big deal. Nate Jerry, big deal. T.J. Edwards, supposed to be doing some good things in his second year, but he was an undrafted signee. Duke Riley, Alex Singleton. Again, in 2012, in the second round, they selected Michael Kendricks, became a player. Kind of, they soured on him eventually. I don't know why. He was always a player. He was always a playmaker. And Jordan Hicks, which was a very good pick in the third round, except that he couldn't get out of a pool without getting hurt. Unfortunately, because he was a playmaker, and this team needs playmakers on defense. You need an impact guy. You can see how important guys like Ray Lewis. Remember how important? Now he's one in a million. But to have a like Leighton Vander Esch, another high pick for Dallas last year, impact player. See, wide receivers to me are a dime a dozen, and although it might be an excellent draft class, they're hit or miss. And having said that, I have written down the top 10 draft classes of all time in according to Bleacher Report in the National Football League. And I'm looking at some of these guys as I look for my notes here. And there are not a lot of them who have won championships. Julian Edelman was an MVP a couple years ago in a meaningless not meaningless, but a very mundane, uneventful Super Bowl when they beat the Rams. Julian Edelman. It's very rare. Very rare that a wide receiver is the MVP, unless you're Jerry Rice. And actually, in the Super Bowl 39 against the Patriots, what's his name? Deion Branch for the Patriots had 11 catches for like a buck 39 and a touch. He was the MVP against the Eagles. But normally, these elite Hall of Fame receivers aren't always on championship teams. And I think they can get a pick, even if they wait till the second round at 57. There are some quality receivers out there. Quality receivers out there. Can someone tell Denzel Mims to shut his mouth, by the way? They obviously are very interested in Denzel Mims. I saw a mock draft by Ruben Frank of NBC Sports Philly a couple weeks ago. He had them taking Denzel Mims with a 21st pick from Baylor. Kid's a player. Eagles talked to him 5 times last week, and he goes and blabs about it. Nothing like keeping trade secrets in-house. Did someone forget to tell Denzel Mims to keep it on the down low that we're very interested in you? He goes and tells the media, yeah, I've talked to the Eagles 4 or 5 times last week. They obviously are interested. Oh. In the first round since 2000, the Eagles have taken 3 wide receivers. Freddie Mitchell in 2001, bust. Jeremy Maclin in 2009, good player. Nelson Aguilar, 2015. Aside from the Super Bowl season, he's been a bust. I'm telling you, you can get a good wide receiver in the second round in this draft class. But I still think taking the biggest impact player available at 21 is the way to go, and maybe holding on to your draft picks because they have a lot of needs to fill. They could also look at a cornerback, C.J. Henderson out of Florida, 6'1", 204 pounds, runs a sub-4.440. He would be a day-one starter opposite of Darius Slay. 93 tackles, 26 pass breakups, 6 interceptions in 3 years at Florida. On the current roster, they have Darius Slay as CB1. Nickell Robey-Coleman, your slot guy. And then you have Sidney Jones and Avante Maddox basically trying to slug it out for the opposite corner of Darius Slay. Rasul Douglas is on the trading block, and Jalen Mills got moved to safety. Sidney Jones is nearing bust status. Avante Maddox, they took those guys back-to-back in the second and third round in 2017. Neither took a snap in the playoff game last year against Seattle. That's how much Jim Schwartz thinks of those two. Cornerback's a key position. Key position. Looks like they have one side solved, you would think. It's like the luxury they had of having Lito and Sheldon for all those years, or Troy and Bobby. Once you got your cornerbacks down, you're in good shape for many years. So C.J. Henderson, if he's still around, he might not be around at 21. They're going to have some decisions to make in terms of going up and getting guys. But to me, Kenneth Murray of Oklahoma, if he's still on the board at 21, I think I go with him. Even if Justin Jefferson is sitting there, I still think they can get a quality wide receiver later in the draft. Later in the draft. And take the biggest impact guy. Day one starter right away. We all remember how Jordan Hicks, how big of a playmaker he was when he was on the field. You need playmakers. You need guys to make plays. They don't have that. Malcolm Jenkins was a playmaker. He's been on the decline. Not anymore. What playmakers do they have on defense? Brandon Graham, not so much. 8.5 sacks, big deal last year. Fletcher Cox, in my opinion, overrated. Maybe he'll get some help now with Hargrave in the mix and Malik Jackson coming back. Maybe he'll get a little bit of a relief. Hell of a player, but I just always thought he wasn't Aaron Donald, and I think people think he's Aaron Donald around here. 610-632-0975. 610-632-0975. You take a wide receiver at 21, even if your guy is sitting there? I go in a different direction. And I thought long and hard about that this week. Last week, I was all gung-ho to go up and get Henry Ruggs, which, again, wouldn't be the worst idea. Again, I wouldn't kill the pick if they did that. I wouldn't kill it. I don't think they're going to be around past 15, though. The top three guys, Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb, Henry Ruggs III. I think those guys are going to go. Then you have Justin Jefferson. You have Denzel Mims. Those are probably your top five prospects. You would think you would get one of them at 21. But Denver at 15, you'd have to jump Denver because Denver's looking for a wide receiver, too. Michael Jordan documentary starts tomorrow night. I know we're all looking forward to watching that. I think I am. There's probably one person on the planet not looking forward to it. His name's LeBron James. Because Mike is going to get 19 hours of free advertising. Whether he looks bad or not, he's got 6 rings, and that's LeBron's legacy is catching Mike. He took a year off last year going to the Lakers, a bad team. Now they're back in the mix, but this might be a wasted year. He's got 3 rings. I mean, that's fine. Like Gretzky only had, Messier had 6 cups, Gretzky had 4. I mean, once you get to a certain number, that's fine. You know, you're not going to catch Bill Russell. You don't always have to have as many rings as the other guy. 4 rings is pretty good for Gretz. Also played in the finals with the Kings. A different team took them to the finals. Probably should have won that if Marty McSorley's stick wasn't illegally curved. And John LeClair didn't come up big in back-to-back overtime games. But anyway, when he was a Hab. Going to do our Mount Rushmore tomorrow night, too, with Mike. I know we haven't done that in a while. Top 4 players of all time. I got mine all set, and I got my arguments to back it up, because I know people aren't going to always agree with what I have to say. But that's for tomorrow. I'm going to save that for tomorrow. Once again, Joe Stajak, I'm here 4 to 8 tomorrow. Dylan McKinnon, behind the glass, taking your calls at 610-632-0975, 610-632-0975. We're going to have some fun tonight. Once again, we're talking about this draft class and where it ranks among the top 10 of all time. I mean, there have been some fine draft classes. I'm looking at the number 10 draft class, according to Bleacher Report, was from 2014. The 63rd pick was Jarvis Landry. Mike Evans, the number 7 pick. OBJ, the number 12 pick. Brandon Cooks, the number 20 pick. Devontae Adams, number 53. Sammy Watkins, number 4. That's the 10th ranked draft class. Think about that. Think about all those big names I just reeled off. Jarvis Landry, Mike Evans, Odell Beckham Jr., Brandon Cooks, Devontae Adams, Sammy Watkins. Ranked 10th. Ranked 10th. That's a loaded up class. Those are 6 impact players. Now you go to the 1998 class, and you only have 2 impact players. There's no undercard. You have your headliners, Randy Moss at 21. Can you believe 20 teams passed on Randy Moss because he had some issues at Marshall? 982 receptions, 15,292 yards, 156 touchdowns. And the number 92 pick, Hines Ward. 1,000 receptions, 12,083 yards, 85 touchdowns. I didn't realize he had that many receptions. Now, he was on a championship team. Randy Moss was not, almost was with the Patriots, that 18-0 team. Almost was with the Vikings, who went 15-1 but lost to the Falcons in the NFC title game to Chris Chandler and that crew, the Gary Anderson miss. You have Brandon Ayuk of Arizona State, probably the seventh-ranked receiver in the class. Jalen Reagor of TCU, Michael Pittman of USC, Laviska Shenault of Colorado. There are a lot of good receivers in this class. You could probably pick one up at 57 and still be okay. Look at what Carson Wentz did with practice squad guys last year. I'm not saying they don't need a marquee guy. They do. They need help. Only two receivers under 30 years of age last year. Let's put it a different way. There were two receivers under 30 years of age last year, combined for 13 catches on this team. Combined for 13 catches. It's bad. And they still made the playoffs. Imagine what Carson Wentz would be. One, if he could stay healthy. I know people love when I throw that in. And two, if he had some weapons around him. Like Tom Brady's going to have a big year. Guarantee it. I don't care how old he is. He's got weapons now. Got O.J. Howard, although he's on the trading blocks. Chris Osgood. Mike Evans, who I just talked about. Going to have a big year. Big year. Carson Wentz needs some weps. A day one starter, an impact guy. See, I'd be cool if Justin Jefferson fell to 21, but I don't think he's going to be there. I think you'd get just as much of a value pick at 21 if Justin Jefferson fell in your lap as you would if you traded up, gave up a couple picks to go up and get Henry Ruggs or CeeDee Lamb. You'll have to go up high to get CeeDee Lamb. Apparently Oakland looks like he's taking him, and Jerry Jeudy's going to go in the top 10. But it is a loaded wide receiver class. Having said that, again, I think you can get a top play wide receiver in the second round and take best player available, and it might be Kenneth Murray out of Oklahoma. Would you take a linebacker number one if he's there? Remember, best player available, as long as it's relative to a need. They need wide receivers, yes. They need linebackers, yes. Who do they value more? They haven't valued linebackers in forever around here, but they have nothing. And you can see what a Hall of Fame prototype linebacker can do for a team. You've seen teams with linebackers like that who've gone on to win championships. A guy who steadies the defense, who's the foundation of the defense, moves well side to side, calls the plays, makes plays. I think they're less of a dime a dozen than our wide receivers in this draft class. 610-632-0975. I'm Joe Stajak. I'm here till 10 o'clock tonight. Steve Cowell is coming up at 9:10. Dylan McKinnon behind the glass. 610-632-0975. Coming right back.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Joe Stajak in the house till 10 o'clock tonight. Of course, we're talking about the NFL draft. Got a little game we'd like to play tonight with you as well. Dylan McKinnon, our producer, is going to explain the game. Go ahead, D.
Okay, so we have one of those mock draft simulators open. What we're going to do is we're going to simulate the first 20 picks in each caller at the end of the call. I'll tell you who's available, and you get to make the Eagles pick. We're letting you be the GM. You'll be up. You'll hear this sound. Oh, it's not working. The draft sound.
Da, 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 da.
Yeah. There you go. That time it worked. And then your pick, like we'll do an example right now. I just did a simulation, the first 20 picks, and Joe, you're on the clock. CeeDee Lamb's off the board, Henry Ruggs, and Justin Jefferson off the board. Jerry Jeudy is there, and both linebackers, Kenneth Murray and Patrick Queen, are there. Who are you?
And Jerry Judy's there?
Yeah, Jerry Judy's there.
Jerry's there. Jeudy is there at 21.
Yep, they had Justin Jefferson going off the board to the Raiders. I guess they like Justin Jefferson more than Jerry Jeudy. I mean, we've seen teams pick one play over another when everyone thought consensually the other guy was better before. So, Joe, they pick 21. You're on the clock. Who are you taking?
I got to go Jerry Jeudy if he's there. At 21, I got to go Jerry Jeudy.
You must get Jerry Jeudy.
Again, it kind of goes what I was just talking about, but he's supposed to be marquee.
This is an example of a draft board breaking good for the Eagles, but it's not going to break that way every time.
That breaks pretty well. What mock draft is that?
It's Pro Football Network. I'd ran like 5 for 4, and he had never fallen like that to them in any of the other 5 simulations, but this time he did.
Hey, that's pretty good. I like this, game we got there.
We'll take that.
All right, my man. Let's go to Ben in California. He wants to talk NFL draft. You're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Ben?
Hey, what's up, guys? How you doing?
How you doing, pal?
Pretty good. This is my first time actually calling you. A buddy of mine actually listens to you guys a lot. And I actually grew up an Eagles fan. So, I'm kind of hoping that my name gets called. I'm actually an offensive tackle prospect in the NFL draft. My name's Ben Bartsch. St. John's. So I would love to play for the Eagles. Obviously, that first pick, I would like to hear my name called, obviously, but I know that's not going to happen.
What's your last name, Ben?
Bartsch.
Okay, B-A-R-C-H?
B-A-R-T-C-H.
B-A-R-T-C-H, okay. And you play for St. John's?
Correct, yeah. I mean, I've been reading a lot of, like, mock drafts and stuff, and everyone's saying, like, third-round selection, but I was actually a tight end converted to an offensive tackle, and I've been messaging a lot with Lane Johnson, who plays for the Eagles. Shout out to Lane. And he was actually a tight end converted into a offensive tackle as well. So I'm kind of just curious here. You know, do you guys know anything about the offensive tackle in the draft? Obviously, the Eagles are not getting any of the top 4. But everyone's saying that the drop-off afterward is, like, extremely, extremely, like, low. And I just don't see that. You know what I mean? Like, how do us guys get better if you only put 4 people in a mock draft? You see what I'm saying? Guys like Austin Jackson, guys like myself, Gier Josoli, all these guys that are good OTs and went to good schools. I mean, I'm a Division III player, so obviously there's only been one Division III player from my school. His name was John McDowell, the offensive tackle for the Green Bay Packers in 64 to get drafted from my school. So I'm kind of like not really in the elite company here. So what are your guys' like takes on that in regards to offensive tackles?
I'm sorry, say that one more time, Ben.
What are your guys' like thoughts in regards to offensive tackles? Do you think reaching for them is a big move? I mean, obviously, you know, the Eagles have, you know, Johnson and have Kelsey and Brandon, so it's a little different. But those guys are aging, right?
They need depth. They absolutely need depth on the offensive line. And by the way, what are you playing at St. John's for if you're from Salem, Oregon?
Well, I went to high school in Oregon. And the thing is like, I was a tight end, so I ended up applying to, Oregon, Oregon State. They did not accept me for school. So I only had, like, a lot of players, you know, in college, you know, you run out of options. You know what I mean? So,
where are you projected to go?
I'm in the 3rd round.
Really?
Yeah.
Fantastic. So, I'm going to have to get you back on the air. Hold on. I got,
absolutely.
Hey, Dylan, would you take this number down that he has the cell phone? Cause I'm going to get back to Ben as the draft goes on. And once you get selected, Ben, I'm going to call you and bring you back on the air. Is that cool?
Absolutely. That's perfect. I definitely appreciate it.
Hey, man, good luck to you, man. I appreciate you calling in. All right.
Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks, Ben. Ben Bartsch from Salem, Oregon, playing for the Johnnies, projected to go in the 3rd round. How about that? Got a special guest caller. You got his number, right? Okay, good. I want that number later. I'll put it in my cell, and then we'll call him after he gets drafted. Good for him. I didn't give him a chance to do the draft game, you dummy. Sorry. I got all excited that he was the prospect that was actually calling the show. That was cool.
If he ends up being picked, if he does end up being picked by the Eagles, we have a pre-interview for...
I know. How cool is that? That's very cool. Yeah, I botched the game with him, but he probably would have said himself anyway at 21. Good for him. I hope he does well. He's a senior. He played all 4 years at St. John's. Third round selection. The Eagles need depth. Yes, they need depth. I would not take an offensive tackle in the first or second round. They need help in other areas. Andre Dillard obviously is going to be probably starting this year, protecting Carson Wentz's backside, hopefully doing it to a fairly well, because that is important. Yeah, I would go with Jerry Jeudy if he was available at 21. Again, against what I was talking about. But, I mean, Judy's the marquee receiver in the draft. If he drops to 21, first of all, if he drops to 21, something happened. Maybe he had one of those Laramie Tunsil pot masks on or something that surfaced right before the draft or something. Because if he drops to 21, I'd, you know, be out of my mind. Out of my mind. So, anyway, so that's the game we're going to play tonight. And who would you like them to take at 21? And how are you looking at this documentary tomorrow night? Are you going to watch? It might jade your thoughts on Mike a little bit. It might. If he comes out looking like a, you know, not quite the dude you'd want to hang out with, have a beer with, have a cigar with. You know he's not going to be that guy. He was never that guy. He's not LeBron. He's not Magic. He's not Steph. You know, he was a different individual.
Yeah, yeah. He said it himself that after watching this, there's going to be a lot of people who think he's kind of a jerk.
Yeah, well, a lot of people did think he was kind of a jerk. Yeah. I'm curious to see how far they get into the gambling issues and why he left and tried to play baseball and some of the other things that went on and some of the things behind the scenes. I'm curious. Did you say he watch it? He already had a chance to watch it?
He talked about it. He said he doesn't think he's going to come off very well. I don't know if he's watched it, but he's certainly knows what's going to be in it.
Okay.
So we'll see. He didn't seem to think it's going to be a good look for him. I'm curious to see if it gives us an answer finally, because there's that theory that his 3-year hiatus was actually a suspension, that he was suspended from the league for betting on games, and then the NBA just kind of said, okay, just take a year, those years off. We're not going to actually suspend you because we don't want to hurt your brand since you are the NBA.
He is the NBA.
But
yeah,
we know he had gambling problems, and there's a lot of people who think that time when he went to play baseball was actually just because he was suspended. I'm curious to see if we get an answer on that.
Yeah. Interesting how they portray him in this document. A lot of footage, 19 hours worth. That's a lot to put together. That is a lot to put together. So I'm looking forward to it. I wonder if you're going to be doing the same and how it might jade your thoughts on Mike. And also, we're playing the draft game tonight. We have time to take another call before we take a break. Max in Allentown wants to talk NFL draft. You're on 97.5 The Fanatic. Max, what's up, buddy?
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Thanks for calling in, pal.
I'm just, you know, with Howie Roseman, he gets so much, like, you know, defense by the fans. And I know, you know, that's part of the game, you know, as Eagle fans who want to defend our own. But really, this guy, 9 years as GM, has one of the worst track records for drafting. And his specialty is supposed to be contracts, yet we got horrendous contracts with Alshon Jeffrey, DeSean Jackson, and some other guys. It baffles me the amount of sympathy he gets. And this team is slowly diminishing year after year, okay, with him at the helm and Joe Douglas no longer around to bail him out, okay?
Yeah, no, I know. I hear you.
Yeah, it's as a fan, it's literally driving me away from the team because it's almost like I'm rooting for them to lose so Howie can, how could I say, be fired. You know, that's where it's come for me. The mistakes he makes in the draft is just painstaking year after year. Marcus Smith, Danny Watkins, Last year with Arcega Whiteside, hated the pick, okay? I mean, this is redundant now. And the guys that he hits on, they're the obvious choice. You know, the running back, that was the obvious choice last year. You know, and anybody could have made that pick. But as a good GM, you have to filter through all that and find the real gems. You know, like in baseball with Jason Worth. Okay, like finding somebody that could turn your
team
around.
That's where you make your bones.
Right. And he hasn't had any of those moves at all.
No, he hasn't. He has not been good at the draft. He had one good year in free agency 2017 where everything hit and they won a Super Bowl, right. But that's not how you build a team. And that's why they're now looking at areas of need in this draft because they have holes in a lot of different areas. Before we take a break, Max, you're going to play the game. Did you hear how it's played?
No, I haven't.
All right, Dylan, can you explain again?
All right, so we simulated the first 20 picks of the draft. I'm going to tell you which players are still on the board. You're going to be in the GM chair, and you're going to make the pick. Okay, so Jerry Judy's off the board. CeeDee Lamb's off the board. Denzel Mims is actually off the board. The top wide receiver still left is Justin Jefferson. Kenneth Murray went off the board the pick before them. So all right. With all that information, you are on the clock. Who are the Eagles taking at pick 21?
So Henry Ruggs is still available.
Henry Ruggs is off the board, actually. I forgot to mention him. Okay. Justin Jefferson's the top-rated wide receiver still on the board. And you also have Patrick Queen.
Yes, that's the guy I want. I want the linebacker because we have to stop these running backs in our division, and he's the guy to do it in the passing game and in the running game. So give me him.
Okay, Patrick Queen at LSU.
Max, that's a good pick. Appreciate the call, man. We got to take a break. Let's see. He's probably going to go before Kenneth Murray. But if he's there at 21, I take him over Kenneth Murray and Justin Jefferson. I just do because of the running back. They got Saquon Barkley to deal with. They got Zeke Elliott to deal with. Who's the Skins back? The kid from who got hurt, is he back? Is he ready to play again? By the way, I will say this again. You can mark the date down. It's April 18th, 2020. If the Washington Redskins pass on Tua at number 2, they will be mired in sub-mediocrity for the next 15 years. Trust me on that. If they take Chase Young, it will be a colossal mistake of epic proportions if they pass on Tua. You heard it here first. Joe Stazak, 97.5 The Fanatic, coming right back.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back to the show. Joe Stazak in the house. I'm here till 10 o'clock tonight. Draft Day 2020 coming up in a few days. It is a Sports Armageddon Day 36. How you holding up? Got a little game we're playing tonight. Dylan McKinnon, our esteemed producer behind the glass. Explain it once again, Dylan, because I like this game that we're playing here. It's a lot of fun for each caller.
So we're going to simulate the first 20 picks. We're using one of the mock simulators that you can find online. There's a bunch of them online. I'll let you know who's off which guys are off the board, who's still left. And then you'll hear this sound, which means you're on the clock. You are Harry Roseman, and you're at pick 21. You're making that pick, and you tell us who you're taking. So far, you took Jerry Jeudy, who miraculously fell to the Eagles. And then we had, Max take Patrick Queen after four wide receivers went off the board. Justin Jefferson was the best one available there. He decided instead of taking the wide receiver, he went for a linebacker.
Okay, interesting. Looking forward to this because Jerry Jeudy was on the board when it was my turn, and Patrick Queen and Henry Ruggs was off the board, so... I doubt that's realistic. I think he's going to be... Well, no, he will be off the board, I think, probably by 15. We shall see.
You never know. There could be a face mask bong incident.
What's that?
There could be a face mask bong incident again that makes him fall.
Right, Laramie Tunsil.
Yeah.
That was ridiculous. Dolphins got a sweet pick because he fell to like 13.
You never know what happens. Weird stuff happens on draft night sometimes. Sometimes there's a play, everyone thinks, oh, this guy's going to go in the top 10. And then he just starts falling and falling. And some team gets lucky. I doubt it'll happen, but you never know.
You never know. It could, right? It could. All right. We shall see. We shall see. We're also talking about the Mike documentary tomorrow night. Are you going to watch? Are you afraid it's going to jade your opinion of Mike? It's not going to bother me. I already have my opinion of Mike. I know the stories. I know the behind-the-scenes stories, some of them. You know, I never thought he was all that wholesome. Tremendous player, a killer, ultra-competitive, probably a pain in the ass as a teammate, terrible general manager, and would probably be a bad coach. You know, great players would probably most likely be bad coaches. That's kind of the thing, because they don't understand how other players can't do some of the things that they could do because it came so easy to them. They were ultra talented. So great players don't always make great coaches. If you notice, Craig Berube, an example, a thug, wins a Stanley Cup. Still can't get over that. Still can't get over that. Blues probably won't have a chance to repeat. Probably won't have a chance to repeat this year. Because I don't think there's going to be an end to the hockey season or the basketball season. I heard some people, you know, I see on Twitter, like, you know, and I heard on Jason's show today. Welcome back, Jason, by the way. Jason Martinez back in the house. Some people say, I don't care. I don't care if the Sixers come back. Let's scrap the season, wait till next year. Does anyone else feel like that out there? I know they're not feeling that way about the Flyers because the Flyers were in a good position. They had won 9 of 10 when the season came to an abrupt halt. Sixers are completely dysfunctional. And I know people are wondering now, because the season might not have a finish if Brett Brown gets another chance next year. What do you do? I will tell you this right now. I make a replacement. I don't care what happens the rest of this year. Unless the league resumes and they win the whole thing or get to the finals, not the conference finals, I make a change. That's my first move. I make a change at the top. That's where it all comes down from. It all trickles down from the top. It's a completely dysfunctional team. Sixers are a completely dysfunctional team. So why anyone thought that this team, after removing Jimmy Butler from the roster, would somehow be better? Than last year's team, just with the addition of Al Horford and Josh Richardson, out of your mind. They were a better team last year. They had a shooter. They had a perimeter game at least a little bit. J.J. Redick, I know he was a defensive liability, but he could shoot. They had a guy who could knock down the three. They had a killer. They had a closer. They had a leader. They had a guy who wanted to win. Sorry to say, this team's a mess. They're just a mess. What are they, fifth in the conference right now? Did they drop to six? They fifth? I haven't checked in a while. But no, I'd still like to see the end of the season. I'd love to see what happens or what would happen. I mean, we've seen plenty of times teams don't fare well in the regular season and then all of a sudden they flip the switch and shift gears and make a run. I don't think this team has it in them. I don't think they're talented enough. And they're dysfunctional. Their two should-be leaders are immature. One's too stubborn to expand his game. And the other's just basically immature, doesn't take care of himself, does stupid things, says stupid things, embarrasses the organization, embarrasses himself. They don't have much of a perimeter game. And the coach is too soft. He's soft on everybody. They need leadership, and it starts with the coach. Elton Brand needs to make a move. I know it doesn't sound fair because they were going to let the season play out. Let's see what he does. Let's evaluate him on how he does this postseason or with this team this season. This will be his last evaluation. Let's see how he does. If it doesn't come to fruition, I'm sorry. That's it. I don't wait another year. It's pointless. It's inevitable. They need to make a change. And it begins with the head coach. Brett Brown, nice guy. Players coach. Players love him. That's the problem. I don't think they respect him enough. You know, if my coach tells me I need to expand my game or start taking mid-range jump shots or three-pointers, that's what I do. And I work in the offseason to make that happen, which apparently Ben Simmons has been doing, but he won't do it in the game. It's unbelievable to me that he's not made to do that. Head coach needs to make him do that. He's the head coach. He's in charge. That's why it appears that the team is in charge. The inmates run the asylum, and that can't happen, ever. I know that the NBA players, with all the money they make and the contracts and all the G money, they make so much more than their coaches. And the respect level is down. You think LeBron respects his coaches? LeBron is the coach out there. He's asked to come out of the game. He doesn't want to. He's not going to come out of the game. He's going to do what he wants. It's LeBron James. I mean, players run the asylum in the NBA. It's as simple as that. 610-632-0975. Joe Stasiak here till 10 o'clock tonight. Steve Callis coming up at 10 after 9. We're talking NFL draft, and we're doing some mock simulations tonight. If you call in, give us your point, and then we'll put you on the clock at 21. And we have a draft simulator, which tells you who's still on the board at 21, and you get to make the pick. 610-632-0975. I'm Joe Stasiak. Coming right back.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Sorry, we had a little problem there with our music. I'm Joe Stasiak in the house. Talking NFL draft, of course. How does this wide receiver class stack up with some of the other all-time great receiving classes? This is a good one, at least on paper. At least on paper. You look at some of the great draft classes of all time. I mean, my goodness gracious. I just went over number 10. Let's see here. Number 10, the 2014 class, had Jarvis Landry, the 63rd pick overall. He has 564 catches, 6,188 yards, 32 touchdowns. Mike Evans at number 7, OBJ at number 12, Brandon Cooks at number 20, Davante Adams at number 53, and Sammy Watkins at number 4. That's the 10th rated draft class for wide receivers, according to Bleacher Report. That's the 10th. Jarvis Landry, Mike Evans, OBJ, Brandon Cooks, Davante Adams, Sammy Watkins. Now you look at the 1998 class, and they only have two headliners, no undercard. Pretty good headliners, though. Randy Moss, Hall of Famer, Hines Ward. Hines Ward a Hall of Famer? Dylan? He's got more catches than Randy Moss. Half the touchdowns. Randy Moss, 982 receptions, 15,292 yards, 156 touchdowns. Hines Ward, 1,000 receptions, 12,083 yards, 85 touchdowns. No undercard in the class of 1998. That's the Randy Moss, Randall Cunningham year. Class of 1957 was number 8. Don Maynard, remember him? Tommy McDonald, former Eagle, passed away recently. Jimmy Orr. Del Schaffner. I love looking at some of these draft classes. There you go. 2010, ranked number 7 overall.
Ward is not in the Hall of Fame yet.
Ward is not in the Hall of Fame. Thank you. 2010 class, ranked number 7 overall. Antonio Brown, the 195th pick. He was a 6th-round pick. He's like Tom Brady. 6th-round pick. One of the best receivers of all time. 841 receptions, 11,263 yards, 75 touchdowns. Demaryius Thomas. Dez Bryant was number 24, 531 receptions, 7,459 yards, 73 touchdowns. Golden Tate, former one-time Eagle, big touchdown against the Bears in that playoff game with Nicky Foles. Drafted 60th overall, 660 receptions, 7,890 yards, 44 touchdowns. That's the 7th best draft class. This year you got Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb, Henry Ruggs III, Justin Jefferson, Denzel Mims. Those are the top, those are probably the top 5. Now, how they pan out, who knows? Who knows how they pan out? There are some good draft classes here. Number 6, the 1991 draft class. Keenan McCardell, remember him? Played opposite of Jimmy Smith at Jacksonville. Also won a championship with Tampa Bay in his 2 years there. He was drafted 326th overall. That's when the draft was 12 rounds and it went to 8, I think, in 1993. 326th overall. The last 160 picks of that draft, only one made the Pro Bowl, and that was Keenan McCardell. Herman Moore, number 10, almost 10,000 yards, 62 touchdowns. Eddie McCaffrey, father of Christian McCaffrey, who just became the highest paid running back for the Carolina Panthers. Jeff Graham, number 46. Sean Jefferson at 240. I mean, that's Mr. Irrelevant territory. Jake Reed, number 68. That's the 91 draft class when there were 12 rounds. Remember that? Remember how long that took? Those 12 rounds? What else we got? We have, here we go. I'm looking at top draft classes of all time. By the way, if you call in, you get a chance to play our draft simulator. Our draft simulator. Eagles are sitting at 21. You call in, make your point, whatever it may be. Whether it is regarding the Michael Jordan documentary coming out tomorrow night, whether it's the draft class, whether it's taking a wide receiver at 21 or moving up, or taking a different position player at 21, moving back in the draft possibly. Moving out of the first round, still getting their guy, acquiring another pick. And then we have a draft simulator. Eagles are sitting at 21. Dylan is on this website where I guess he pushes a button and all 20 picks before the Eagles go, and then you see what's left at 21, and you, the caller, get to make your selection. You get to make your selection. So far we've had Patrick Queen go, and Jerry Jeudy was on the board. I think that was my pick. And I've been pushing for best player available. Not necessarily a wide receiver just because they need a wide receiver. Because I think they could still get a quality wide receiver with the 57th pick or maybe move back in the draft, pick up a pick, still get a good quality wideout. Maybe a Denzel Mims will still be sitting there. How about the 1985 class? Check this class out. Jerry Rice, 16th pick overall. 15 teams passed on Jerry Rice. 1,549 receptions, 22,895 yards, 197 touchdowns, the greatest receiver of all time. Maybe the greatest football player next to Tom Brady of all time. Andre Reed, Kutztown State, number 86, played for the Bills. 951 receptions, played with Jim Kelly, 13,198 yards, 87 touchdowns. Eric Martin at number 179. Some of these players were very impactful. So that's what I'm talking about. You take Eric Martin at the 179th pick. Al Toon, remember Al Toon from the Jets? He was the number 10 pick. Eric Martin, 179, actually had more receptions than Al Toon. Al Toon had 517. Eric Martin, 553. Number 13, Eddie Brown. I wonder if that was the Eddie Brown from Miami. Because this was 1985. Yeah, they won a national championship when they beat Nebraska in 83. That's probably Eddie Brown from the University of Miami. Only 363 catches, 6,184 yards, 41 touchdowns. Not bad. He was the number 13 pick overall. Fast as you wouldn't believe. The number one class of all time per Bleacher Report. The class of 1996. Check this out. I mean, the top two just blow you away. Blow you away. You have T.O., 89th pick from Tennessee Chattanooga. Terrell Owens finished with 1,078 receptions, 15,934 yards, 153 touchdowns. 14 of them came here with the Birds. Number 19, Marvin Harrison. Local product from Roman Catholic, 1,102 receptions, 14,580 yards, 128 touchdowns. Those are your top two picks. Then you have, check this out. No wonder this is the top class. Then you have at 43, Musim Muhammad. Then at number one that year, Keyshawn Johnson. Eric Molds was number 24. Eddie Kennison was number 18. Number 34 was Amani Toomer out of Michigan. Terry Glenn out of Ohio State at number 7. Number 135, Joe Horn at 135. Going to be interesting to see where this draft class stacks up because they are, at least on paper, they're pretty loaded.
We've seen wide receivers who come out and everyone says, oh, this guy's going to be a stud. This guy's going to be a star. He should go top 10. And they just don't pan out.
Because
I mean, remember
out.
Justin Blackman, he was supposed to be great. Haven't heard a peep from him since. He came to the NFL, sputtered out really quickly.
Right.
Sammy Watkins was supposed to be amazing, and he's a good wide receiver, but he's not. He's not even with the same team anymore, and he's good, but he's not top 10 pick worthy like he was.
Right. No.
Sometimes these can't miss wide receivers miss.
Yeah. No. I hear you. That happens. Happens a lot. So we're talking about the draft, obviously, and you get a chance. We have a simulator working for us tonight. It's a pretty cool thing, actually. It tells you who's left at 21. And you can call in also with your philosophy. Would you move up? Would you move back? Would you stay put? Would you go in a different direction than a wide receiver? I've already said yes. So we're playing that game tonight. Again, Steve Callis from Callis Remarks comes up at 10 after 9. We'll also do our Mount Rushmore tomorrow night with respect to the Michael Jordan documentary that comes out. Joe Horn, 135. I still can't get over that. Keenan McCardell, 326. Anyone see the I got to be honest. I got to take a shot at Tom Brady. Everyone knows I have a man crush on Tom Brady. Something he did this week. In fact, see if you can get it. See if you were aware of this. Brady was in the news briefly this week for doing something that I thought was childish. Very childish. And way past bedtime. What Tom Brady do to annoy me? And he doesn't usually annoy me. I like pretty much everything he stands for, everything he does. I think he's a tremendous ambassador for the game, tremendous player. But one thing that he continues to do just bothers the heck out of me. What is it? Maybe it bothered you too. Maybe you don't like him to begin with. Maybe you don't like Tom Brady to begin with, and this thing continues to just irk beyond belief. Wouldn't blame you. So what are you doing in the draft? What are you doing in the draft? Again, the Eagles do not take linebackers very often high. They took Michael Kendricks in the second round in 2012, 2015. It was Jordan Hicks. Both turned out to be very good players. Both would have started for a Super Bowl championship team if Jordan Hicks was healthy. They got nothing at linebacker, guys. I know they don't necessarily historically value that pick or that position. But with some of the backs in this league, they better start thinking about it. They got rid of their best linebacker, Nigel Bradham. Kamu Grugier-Hill, their second best linebacker, signed with the Dolphins. Zach Brown didn't pan out last year. They got Jatavis Brown. He's not, the next coming. Dylan, you were going to read. We had a guy call in. His name was Ben Barch. Is that correct? Ben Barch played 4 years at St. John's, projected to go in the third round. He called the show a little while ago. He called from California. He's from Salem, Oregon, but played 4 years for the Johnnies, projected to go in the third round. And Dylan, you have a profile on him. What do you got?
Yeah, this is from NFL.com, so it's from their scouts. Take what they say for what you will, but they're saying he's a converted tight end. He has plenty of athletic ability. He ran 10-meter hurdles and 4x400 relays in high school, so he's an athlete. He's not your average, what do you think of, offensive tackle. He's just a big, lumbering guy. He can move. He's pretty fast. I did shot put in college, so apparently scouts really like that. I don't know what that has to do. I guess that has to do with core strength, I guess. But apparently scouts really like that he did shot put. I don't know what that would have to do with being an offensive lineman, but I guess it has something to do with it. They said he has good side-to-side speed and good quickness, which would make him really good in pass protection and second-level protection. The only real negatives they have about him is that he's inexperienced. He said he was a converted tight end, so he hasn't been doing this for all that long. But, I mean, from what I understand from this scouting report, he has the chance to be a really good guy, offensive lineman, if he can go to the right team and they can coach him up and teach him all the proper techniques to being an offensive lineman to go along with his athleticism.
I hope he does well. I hope he gets drafted high and we get to talk to him again. Yeah. Seemed like a good guy.
By the way, I checked in our draft simulator. He's ranked as the 94th best player in the draft. That's according to the draft simulator we've been using for our draft game during the show.
He's what?
They ranked him as the 94th best player in the draft. So, yeah, probably a late third round pick based on that.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I would go offensive. I would go offensive tackle later in the draft.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like this year the Eagles really need to focus on players who can contribute this year, at least in the top first three rounds. Last year they took a few guys who are future type picks, like Andre Dillard wasn't a first year contributor really, that they weren't planning on him being a contributor. They felt like they had a chance to take a player that they could stash. This year they don't have enough depth, or they don't have enough talent across the roster. They can't afford to take a guy early that isn't going to play the first year. If they're going to take an offensive lineman, it should probably either be an offensive guard or a center, because you don't know how long Kelce has, and you don't really know how much you can trust, say, Amalu.
Yeah, that's true. They don't have depth on the offensive line. They don't. Jason Peters is gone. Big V got $50 million 5 years in Detroit. I would wait a little later. I think you can get offensive depth, offensive line depth later in the draft.
Well, they found Kelce late in the draft.
He's sixth round.
It's one of the best draft picks they've ever had. I mean, that Kelce, he's a potential Hall of Famer at center. He's been one of the best centers in the league since he came up.
Been phenomenal.
And now that Travis Frederick is out, you can make the case he is the best center in the league.
How about Travis Frederick retiring before 30?
A lot of guys doing that now.
Yes, they are. They want to be able to walk, you know, and think. So, okay. Well, we shall see. Again, what did Tom Brady do this week that irked me to no end? And it continues to irk me. Maybe it irked you. Maybe you didn't hear about it. I think it's way past bedtime on it. But Ben Bartsch, keep an eye on Ben Bartsch. Dylan just gave a preview of him. He called in the show a little while ago. He was supposed to go somewhere in the third round, maybe late third round, as Dylan said a little while ago. So we shall see. 610-632-0975, 610-632-0975. Where does Mike rank? I have four people on Mount Rushmore, and I was going to wait and save this till tomorrow. I might start doing it today. I got four people on Mount Rushmore. I don't necessarily want to get into a Mike versus LeBron, but I have four of my top players, and not necessarily in any order. Where would you put Mike? Where would you put Michael Jordan? Remember how I compare guys who play for different teams and in different environments. Pull them out of their environments, and who do you start your team with? That's how you decide who the best player is. It's how I, again, pick my quarterback in Eagles history. Take Donovan away from his genius of an offensive quarterback coach in Andy Reid and Brian Westbrook and T.O. and take Randall away from Anthony Tony and Michael Haddix and Calvin Johnson and whatever. Take them out of their environments. Put them next to each other. Who do you start your team with? I go Randall. I know Donovan had more success. I think Randall's a better quarterback, even though his numbers may not bear that out. That's who I would go with. I'd go with the ultimate weapon. Two times he was the best player in football. I don't want to get into that conversation. That's just how I'm saying how I evaluate, like a LeBron versus a Mike. It's like putting a Gretzky up against a Patrick Roy. Those two things, it's like putting a center up against a guard. It's hard to do because they're different positions. So that's a little difficult. If you want to put Wilt up against Mike, Wilt up against LeBron, it's very tough to do that. Because they're really, really different positions. And now it's a three-point shooting game. Back then, I mean, Wilt wasn't a three-point shooter, obviously.
And back then, there was no one else like Wilt.
Wilt
was a giant amongst men. I mean, that would be like one of us, like, sitting next to, like, an NBA player. He's just so much bigger than everyone else, mostly everyone else in the NBA. Back then, there weren't that many as tall guys in the NBA.
Right.
He just had such a distinct advantage, and to his credit, he used it.
Right, sure. Awesome. Awesome stuff. All right, well, Vinny, hang in there. We have some open phone lines. I'll get you on the other side, Vin. He's Dylan McKinnon behind the glass. If you want to talk to me, you got to talk to him. 610-632-0975. I'm Joe Stasek. We are coming right back.
97.5 The Fanatic. 97.5, The Fanatic.
Welcome back to the show. Joe Stasiak in the house, 827-97.5, The Fanatic, 610-632-0975. We've got a few things on the docket, and of course we're playing a simulated draft game tonight. You call in, we have a draft simulator that gives the first 20 picks and tells you who's available at 21, and then you get to make the pick. Call in with your point first, and then you get to play our game. 610-632-0975. Let's go to Vinny in Maryland. You're on 97.5. What's up, Vin?
Hey, what's up, Joe, man?
How you doing, bud?
Good. Listen to you guys on the app. Really enjoy the app. Lived in PA for a long, long time, and one thing I took with me was the Fanatic app, that's for sure. I've enjoyed your show for a long. I really always enjoyed listening to you. Enjoy listening to you on the weekends. But for years, I've always enjoyed you. You've always been one of my favorite hosts. I got a question for you about this all-time draft list. Where does the 83 draft class stand?
The 83 draft class for receivers?
Is that all you're doing is receivers?
Well, that's what I was doing. Yes, that's what I was doing for receivers, not for quarterbacks. You're talking about quarterbacks in 83?
Yeah, I was just talking about in general, but just how much of a powerhouse that 83 draft was. You know, I don't know if that can ever be replicated. So, yeah, that's what I was called. That's what I was wondering about, where the 83 stood from. How did the receivers stack up in 83? Did they even make the board?
Not in the top 10. They did not make the board in the top 10, according to the Bleacher Report now. According to the Bleacher Report, I'll take a look at who was drafted in 1983 and come up with some, see where I would rank that draft class. Who's from the 83 draft class again? Refresh me.
Elway.
Oh, no, you're talking about quarterbacks. Oh, that was an unbelievable draft class for quarterbacks. Absolutely. That was a loaded first round draft class. Loaded. Marino went like 28th.
Which is unbelievable.
Ridiculous. Right? My goodness gracious. Ridiculous. Hey, do you want to play our game?
Yes, I do.
All right, go ahead, Dylan. Dylan, take it away.
Well, I have a little bit of bad news for you because this draft board did not break well for the Eagles if you want a wide receiver. Jerry Jeudy, CeeDee Lamb, Henry Ruggs, Justin Jefferson, and Denzel Mims are all off the board in this case. You do have both Kenneth Murray and Patrick Queen, and according to this, the best rated wide receiver left is Jalen Reagor. Brandon Ayuk is also still there. LaVisca Chenault is there. All the wide receivers except for those five I mentioned are still available. So, Vinny, you're on the board. Who are you drafting at 21?
Taking Queen.
Oh, this is another one for Queen.
Take Queen. I think he's solid there. I think he's solid. I'd go with Queen.
Okay. All right. No, I appreciate the call. It's good stuff. Patrick Queen's the guy. If you ask me, unless Jerry Jeudy's there, Patrick Queen is the guy. He's slightly weighted higher instinctually over Kenneth Murray and played for a championship team, one of the better college teams of all time. I mean, they just rolled folks. But, yeah, Patrick Queen, not a bad answer to go to there. Let's go to D in Fort Washington. You're on 97.5. What's up, D?
Hey, gentlemen, how you doing?
How you doing, pal?
Hello?
How you doing, pal?
Good. I'm just tuned in and I heard a little Mount Rushmore. And I'd like to get my 2 cents.
Go ahead.
To me, the four best had to be Michael, going LeBron, going Wilt, going Jabbar. But the thing is, it's so subjective because...
Okay, Jabbar. Now, okay, that's all right. He's not on mine, but I would not have a problem.
It's so subjective because, I'm born and raised Philadelphia, big Sixer fan, but I would take Larry Bird over LeBron. Like, if you never really watched those two eras, Bird was such a clutch killer that to me, like, honestly, if his body didn't burn out or whatever, he's better than LeBron.
Who's better than LeBron?
Larry Bird.
Maybe.
That's why it's so subjective, because you could say, you know, this guy's in a Mount Rushmore, but in crunch time, game 7 championship, who you want, Prime Larry Bird or Prime LeBron? I'm taking Larry Bird.
It's hard to argue that.
Larry Bird's not passing up that last second shot.
LeBron, I mean, his early years did that, but I think LeBron, I think he's past that. I think LeBron's pretty clutch, to be honest with you. In his early years, I think he shied away in the fourth quarter from wanting the ball. I think that's over. But, yeah, I don't have a problem if you go Bird there. I mean, Bird was one of the great all-time greats.
Yes, he was.
If he's not on Mount Rushmore, he's close. Hey, want to play our game?
Sure. I'm not sure what's going on, but hit me with it.
Go ahead, Dylan.
Okay, so in this draft, the top three wide receivers are off the board. So there's no Ruggs, no Judy, no Lamb. Jefferson and Mims are there. Kenneth Murray and Patrick Queen are there. And if you want a corner, Terrell is there. But C.J. Henderson is off the board. So, D, you are on the board.
Mr. Jefferson, welcome to Philadelphia.
Okay. One for Justin Jefferson.
Great show. Thanks, guys.
Hey, appreciate it, D.
No Ruggs.
So he took Justin Jefferson?
Yep.
I don't have a problem with that.
Yep. Justin Jefferson out there. I feel like a lot of people shy away from him because he's a quote-unquote slot wide receiver, but there's a lot of very good slot wide receivers in the NFL. Slot wide receivers can still put up a lot of damage.
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. I still go with who was on the board there when Justin Jefferson got selected?
Both linebackers, Kenneth Murray and Queen, are both there.
I'm sorry. What do you do, Dale? What do you do in that situation? I'm not trying to persuade you. I came on the show tonight saying I might go in a different direction. I might go with one of the two linebackers, although I think Patrick Queen might be gone. I think Kenneth Murray might be gone. You might have to move up to get him too, but if he's there, I think I'd go him. I think he's a bigger impact player, and I think you can get an impact guy later in the round at wide receiver. What do you think?
I get the logic at linebacker. I do think it's a need for them, but I get when people say, oh, it's a deep draft, you can wait. But I can't take that chance. I can't go another year where they don't have that go-to wide receiver. They need to get someone that they trust. And if they wait to pick 57, there might be a guy there who they like, but then their choice could be taken away from them. So I'm not saying you have to take a wide receiver, but if you don't, you better be prepared to be able to move up in the second round to get one, because teams are going to know at that pick Eagles have to take a wide receiver in the second round if they don't get one in the first. So teams that want wide receivers are going to be jumping them. There could be a run before them. So I'm probably taking a wide receiver in that first pick, provided one of the ones I really like are there. If all of them are gone somehow, if there's a run on wide receivers before pick 21, I might go with a linebacker, but if Justin Jefferson's there, I take him over Murray or Queen, even though I think maybe those could be better players. I just can't go another year without having an explosive wide receiver. I need one.
Okay.
And I don't like to take need. I usually say best value available, the player who you think is going to most improve your team. But I think one good wide receiver, one like really good wide receiver, could take this from a kind of a mediocre offense or a really good offense, if you can get Wentz that go-to guy.
Yeah, they certainly need a weapon for Wentz. They really do. He did a nice job with his practice squad guys, but, I mean, they have a guy that they took in the second round, and he had 10 catches last year. 10 catches. Played in 16 games, started 5, had 10 catches. J.J. Arcega-Whiteside can't play. Can't play. Greg Ward Jr. doing the best he can. Undrafted, practice squad guy, did a nice job in his 7 games that he played. DeSean Jackson is going to be 33, coming off a major injury. Alshon Jeffrey's old, slow, looked slow when he was healthy, has the Liz Frank injury. They do need some explosiveness. So if you had the opportunity to go Jerry Jeudy or a Henry Ruggs, because a Ruggs is a guy who can run the jet sweep, because you're looking at like a Tyreek Hill wannabe in Henry Ruggs, a guy who can catch those screen passes and yards after the catch and make people miss. Who's a better fit here, a Jerry Jeudy or a Henry Ruggs, do you think, Dale?
I mean, I love them both. I think if I had a choice between the two, for the Eagles, I'd go Henry Ruggs. I feel like he would fit more in what they need someone to do, but I'm not gonna say, oh, you made a mistake if they had that choice and they went and they went Jerry Jeudy. I don't think you can go wrong. I think both are gonna be really good. I prefer Ruggs, but CeeDee Lamb's my favorite of the bunch.
He looks like he's going to Oakland. He's probably the best receiver of the crew, him or Jerry Jeudy and CeeDee Lamb. It looks like everyone, most mock drafts that I've seen have him going to the Raiders at number 12, CeeDee Lamb. CeeDee Lamb. Imagine him with, well, I guess he'd kind of be a replacement for Amari Cooper. He's for a team that's not known for their passing, Alabama certainly comes up with some serious wideouts. This year they have two of the top three. Henry Ruggs and Jerry Jeudy. Now, they were more of a passing team when Jalen Hurts was replaced by Tua. But for the most part, they were never known as a passing team. Amari Cooper comes out. Turns out he's like, you know, an all-pro. Thought Dallas did the right thing, trading a number one pick for him. They had to pay him, and they paid him big money, but he's worth it. Definitely worth it. Having said that, you know, I'm looking at these draft classes, and we've talked about this before, but wide receivers don't usually carry your team to a championship. They just don't. Defense does, first of all. Defense and quarterback. It's nice to have weapons. It certainly is. It helps. Look at Tyreek Hill, how he changed the complexion of that game, the Super Bowl game this past February. Having a guy like Tyreek Hill and Cardone and well, they had Kareem Hunt, Travis Kelce, a lot of speed. A lot of speed out there for KC. Andy Reid did a nice job building that team up. We've got to take a break. Dave in Center City, hang in there, man. We'll get you on the other side. A couple open phone lines right now, and you can play our draft simulator if you give us a call at 610-632-0975. I'm Joe Stasiak. We're coming right back.
97.5 The Fanatic.
We're back. Welcome back. Joe Stasiak in the house, 845 here at 97.5, The Fanatic. Talking draft. What else? Draft 2020 coming up on Thursday night, April 23rd. Big night for the birds at 21, sitting there at 21. Not a great spot, 21. Kind of in no man's land. Usually the top 15 players are your elite. After that, hit or miss. It's 50-50 anyway. Even with the top 15 players, it's 50-50. So we're playing a draft simulator tonight. You call in, you give a point, and then we run the simulator, and the first 20 picks are gone. We'll tell you who's left at 21 and who you, and then you give us your selection at 21. So far, Patrick McQueen was available. I think he was selected twice. Jerry Jeudy was available when I went. I don't know how that's possible. I got to question the credibility of this simulator if Jerry Judy's still available at 21, but I took him, even though I take probably best player available. With regards to need, I'm not taking, you know, like Russell Erksleben's there and he's the best player in the first round as a punter. No. Or a kicker, no. I'm talking about a player that's a relative need. A cornerback would be one. A linebacker would be another. An edge rusher would be another. They need a running back as well. And they certainly need a wide receiver. Multiple wide receivers. That's why I'm disappointed they didn't go out and get DeAndre Hopkins. Pay the man. You've got a thoroughbred at quarterback. Help them out. Help them out. Dave in Center City, you're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, David?
It doesn't get any better than this, Joseph, on a Saturday night.
Oh, thank you, pal. How you doing?
How you feel, my friend?
What's going on with you?
Russell Erksleben. Remember in college football, the field goal kicker would kick off a big block of wood.
Yeah, there's a big block to you.
A block, yeah. So he loads up from 70 yards and nails a field goal, a clothesline. And then the next week, Ove Von Schaman kicks a 72-yarder. And then, you know, Tony Franklin of Tennessee with the bare foot, he just misses on a 73-yarder. The good old days.
Oh, tell me about it. Remember those days? Those days are phenomenal.
Remember those days? Joe, I don't care if, look, the Sixers could easily be eliminated in the first round, or you go all the way, okay? The Flyers cannot beat Tampa Bay or Boston to advance to the Cup Finals. Right now, the Phillies are a third-place team in their own division. But what I'm very concerned with, Joseph, and I'm very nervous about, we're setting up for an Eagles-Chiefs Super Bowl. I don't want any hiccups, Joseph. I want the season, everything to go according to plan. Okay, this is very important. I know Howie's got a plan. But they got to get, first of all, no more clipboard holders, Joe, to back up Carson. No more clipboard holders. A real quarterback. If we have Kaepernick last year coming in off the bench instead of McNamara, we win that game against Seattle. Carson's healthy. We go to Green Bay and win that game. Then we go to Levi Stadium, and who knows what happens against the 49ers. But what does your crystal ball say for the Eagles? And then I'm going to give you a draft pick that you probably know more about than I do. What do you see, Joseph?
In terms of what they're going to do here?
Well, yeah. You know, Sporting News has their preseason poll out already for all 32 NFL teams. They've been spot on the last 5 years. They got the Eagles as the sixth best team in football. I have them as the fourth best team in football. Like going forward, what's your gut say, Joe?
In terms of this team?
Yes.
They need help. I think they need help. I think it's a semi-rebuilding year. I think it's a semi-rebuilding year. Look at the positions they need. They need linebacker help, like all three spots at linebacker. They need two wide receivers at least. They need another cornerback. They need offensive line help. They need a lot of things. It's not going to happen overnight. And I don't think they did a whole lot in free agency either, to be honest with you.
So the ball club last year with third and fourth stringers and Dougie Pete holding the team together with scotch tape came very close to advancing deep into the playoffs. Joe, there's a nose tackle out of Alabama. I think his name's Raquan Davis.
Okay.
And, you know, nose tackle's job is to stop the run. But this guy's got unbelievable athleticism. He's a cross between John Randall, and he's a cross between Joe Klecko when Klecko played nose tackle. I know that defensive line right now, there's not a lot of room, but is this kid going to be there at 21, or is...
It's hard to say. It's really hard to say, to be honest with you, Dave. Are you looking to take him? Is that who your pick would be?
Well, I think Howie's going to trade up. I think he's got something up his sleeve.
Trade up, you think?
Yeah.
Okay, that's possible.
Yeah, I thought AJ Green was coming here, and then the Bengals put a franchise tag on him. Joe, you're not feeling good about the Eagles. Jeff, in a watered down NFC, a semi-rebuilding year might be good enough for the Eagles.
Oh, they're going to win. They're going to win the East, absolutely. Especially with this whole situation going on, this unfortunate situation. You got three teams in your division have new coaches and have to instill, you know, the new game plan, the new philosophy, get to know the players, and no one's allowed to get together.
You want to hear something kooky? They got point spreads out already. According to the point spreads, the Eagles are 8-7-1. Okay. Now, the seven losses are all on the road. Okay. At San Fran, the Eagles are a 5.5-point underdog. That leaves six other road games. They're underdogs, but all by 1.5 points or less. So that's telling you, and again, you can't put any credence in this, Joe, but they're going to be there, Joe.
Yeah, well, they very well might be. Carson Wentz has to stay healthy, Dave, as usual. We'll see how their running game pans out. I still think they need another running back. If they stay healthy on the offensive line, they'll be okay. But again, they're thin there. They don't have any linebackers. They have one cornerback. They have a mess at the other side on the cornerback side. I think they have some issues. They have some issues they have to address. They need to do in the draft, and they need impact guys. Before I let you go, Dave, you know I love you, my friend. Let's do the draft simulator with Dave. Dylan, take it away.
Okay, Dave, at wide receiver, there's still Denzel Mims and Justin Jefferson available. Judy, Lamb, and Ruggs all off the board. Patrick Queen.
Oh, Mims.
You're taking Mims?
Yeah.
Okay. You didn't let Dylan finish. Patrick Queen is still there, the linebacker. Are you going with a wide receiver, or do you care?
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Joe, can I get one other thing in?
Of course.
The Steelers had a propensity for not only drafting an offensive lineman in the first round, and that was Big Ben putting a bug in somebody's ear, but that offensive lineman started. You think it's key that Tom Brady asked Carson only takes 14 sacks all year? If you give that kid time, he'll throw to anybody. It's a real hodgepodge. Who do you think they're going to take in the first round, Joe? Please don't take a linebacker.
Who, the Eagles?
Yeah.
You know, Dave, and I appreciate the call, man. I got to run. It's not likely they're going to take a linebacker. I will say that. I would not summarily dismiss it. I would seriously consider taking, if Patrick Queen is there, if Kenneth Murray's there, I might do that if the top three or four wide receivers are gone. So I don't necessarily like to draft for need. I know it's a huge need. I don't necessarily like to draft for need. I like to take best player available. That's how you fill your team with elite talent. You take best player available. And I'm not sure one of those wide receivers will be the best player available if Patrick Queen or Kenneth Murray are available at 21. We shall see. Good call by Dave. Love to hear him. Steve Callis coming up at 9:10. And you still have an hour to call in. I'm back here tomorrow 4 to 8 so we can talk some more draft, and then we'll get it more into the Mount Rushmore and Michael Jordan and the documentary and all that stuff. And also, something Tom Brady did this week really annoyed me. It's way past bedtime on it, and see if you can get it, if you know what he did. It's a shame because I think he's pretty cool otherwise. But this one thing that he just can't get past just kills me. 610-632-0975. I'm Joe Stazak. We're coming right back.
97.5 The Fanatic.
Welcome back to the show. Joe Stazak in the house. Steve Callis coming up at 9:10 on 97.5 The Fanatic. Playing the draft simulator tonight. Draft simulator. Pretty good stuff. Dylan, explain again the draft simulator.
Okay, so what we're doing we are simulating the first 20 picks of the draft. And then you call in at the end of your call. You get to make that 21st pick. I'll let you know who's off the board and who's available for you to pick. And by the way, I just did another one. you will really like the pick at number two in this simulated one. You'll really love who Washington took. They took Tua Tagovailoa in this simulated draft. You went number two to Washington.
Okay, they should have.
That's the first time I've seen them actually take Tua. I know you've been advocating for that since the draft order came out.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right.
And it happened in this simulated mock.
Yeah, okay. Well, it should have. It should have. Because it's. I think they are out of their minds if they don't take Tua. If they don't take Tua there. Because they don't have their franchise quarterback. They don't have their franchise quarterback. Dwayne Haskins is not a franchise quarterback. I'm sorry. He's just not. He's just not. Chase Young, great player. Probably going to be a great pro. But Tua to me is generational.
Has there ever been a team that went from being a low-ranking team to a high-ranking team just by taking a pass rusher?
That's my point.
I mean,
look at Chicago. They got Khalil Mack, and he's unbelievably disruptive, and they didn't do anything. In fact, they were terrible this year.
I mean, you need pass rushers like that. Every good team has some very disruptive pass rusher, but I don't know if a defensive end or an outside linebacker, if you're playing a 3-4, can be the position that takes you from a perennial loser to a perennial winner. But a really good quarterback, franchise quarterback, they definitely can do that. We've seen it happen. We saw the Eagles go from a not-so-good team to being a really good team once you put Wentz behind center.
Yeah. I agree. But again, look, J.J. Watt, he's awesome. Houston's never done anything. They make the playoffs and they tank. Von Miller, he obviously made a big difference for, you know, he's got the coronavirus. Did you know that Von Miller does?
I saw that.
Yeah, he's got the coronavirus, unfortunately. He made a big difference in that year they won the Super Bowl. Big difference in that year they won the Super Bowl. Otherwise, you know, a big-time pass rusher, does he make that big of a difference? Does he equate to wins and losses like quarterbacks do?
He can if you already have the quarterback. My philosophy always is if you need a quarterback and you see, like if Washington thinks Tua Tagovailoa is going to be a franchise-changing quarterback, and, I mean, I don't know what they think of because it's a different set of, I know the prior front office really loved Dwayne Haskins, but now they have new GM, new head coach. I'm not sure what they think of Tua or what they think of Dwayne Haskins. They might like him. They might not. If they don't like Haskins and if they think Tua is good or if they think Herbert's really good, if they think either of those are franchise-changing quarterbacks, I mean, same goes for the Lions and same goes for any team that's in that top five that doesn't have a quarterback. You take the quarterback. Now, you don't reach for a quarterback, but if you have a really high grade on a quarterback, if you think they're a franchise-changing type of guy, you take that chance. You'll regret not taking them if they turn into a stud more than you would taking them and they bust.
I agree. I think they're going to make a huge mistake. Huge mistake if they miss on Tua. So if you take Tua there, then the Dolphins have to take at five probably Justin Herbert. I'm just thinking. I think Tua should be the number one overall pick. I have said that many times. In fact, Trent Dilfer. You know Trent Dilfer? Dylan? Super Bowl winning quarterback?
I don't trust.
Okay. Here's what he, now, again, he's not the be-all and end-all. Here's what he had to say about Tua. This was on the Colin Cowherd show on November 11th, 2019. Tua is the single best prospect I have ever studied in my years of doing it. Then on, he says this for the Washington Post on April 8th, 2020. Whoever gets him wins the draft because you are getting a Hall of Fame player. Then on the Rich Eisen show, April 11th, recently, 2019, he's a one percenter human being, talent, leader, anything you want to say, he is a one percenter. And then he goes on to say, I don't think Tua gets enough credit, so let's use cars, engines as an example. Joe Burrow's a luxury sedan. He has a lot of horsepower, but if you've ever driven a luxury sedan, there is a lag. When you press on the gas, it goes, okay, all right, pause. Now it's time to go. I don't think Tua, okay, I already said that part. It's a great thing to have. He's an A8 Audi. Tua, though, is a Maserati. Tua, when you just barely touch on the gas, you get jolted. There's that torque that those engines have. He's got such immediate power. He doesn't have to gather into his power. There's no lag. He can tap into it, whether it's his feet or his arm immediately. I think he's the single best prospect I have ever seen. Let me repeat that last line by Trent Dilfer, who's been doing this for a while and is a Super Bowl winning quarterback. I think he's the single best prospect I've ever seen. Okay, now it's Trent Dilfer. That's his opinion. I don't know if I'd go that far. That's just me. I think he's going to be a sensational pro. Trent Dilfer already has him in the Hall of Fame. I just think he's going to be a sensational pro. And I think, yes, he's got that burst. He's got that electricity more than Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow, again, was 1 year, and it was a great year. But I think Tua is your man. So you can call in with your thoughts on top quarterback as well, Joe Burrow or Tua. Cincinnati goes with Burrow. You know they're taking Burrow. He's an Ohio kid. But I think Tua is your guy. Now, Steve Callis is coming on shortly and will tell you that he believes Joe Burrow is a better pick at number one, which is fine. Listen, it's almost 1 and 1A, 6 and 1/2 dozen the other. I mean, Joe Burrow, you saw what he did. He decimated teams, 60 touchdown passes. You saw what he did in the postseason. You just annihilated Oklahoma. He killed Clemson. You know, Joe Burrow was phenomenal. But I just think Tua, I just think Tua is the stud of studs, and if he can stay healthy, and I know some teams are shying away or getting a little scared of his health issues. You know, he's had the ankle injury, he had the hip injury. He's only 6 feet tall, 6'1", maybe at most. He's kind of like a Drew Brees that can run. But I just think he's a generational talent. And speaking of generational talents, Steve Callis on the Comcast Business Hotline. You're on with us right now on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Steven?
All good. Great to be with you as always, Joe.
You too, pal. What's going on? How you feeling tonight? How you making out with the quarantine?
Feeling okay. Watched that ESPN horse game, which I couldn't watch. I couldn't watch the NBA players playing video games, but I could watch the horse. And, you know, if you play horse, and everybody did when they were a kid, the two advantages are if you can shoot from further away than anybody, you have an advantage. And if you can shoot with both hands, you have an advantage. And for some reason, Trae Young just decided not to take threes when that was his advantage. And Conley is ambidextrous. Or ambiguous, as we used to say where I grew up, but he can shoot with either hand, and that coupled with an inside gym I think he was the only.
Say that one more time, Burrow. You broke up.
Conley had his own gym. He was indoors. He's the only guy who's indoors. And anybody who's played ball anywhere knows you're better off indoors than outdoors, especially if it gets rainy or windy or cold. And that affected a lot of the other players. I did like Allie Quigley to beat, you know this because I said it, to beat Chris Paul because she can shoot it.
She could shoot it, and she did pretty well for herself, too. She did very well for herself.
Yeah, Zach LaVine was just too athletic. But, again, if you can shoot it with both hands, and Conley can shoot it with both hands, if I could have bet after the first round, I would have gone and bet him. I don't know. Did they take bets on that? That could be where we are that you're taking bets. I think it was tape, so they probably didn't take bets because people probably knew the winner in advance.
Yeah, no, I agree. All right, let's talk a little bit about the draft.
Let's talk about Joe Burrow. Come on, do you really think Tua might be generational? You might be right, but I think Joe Burrow's generational.
He might be. Again, I've never seen a year like he a year that was put up other than what Joe Burrow did this past year. 60, are you seriously? 60 touchdown passes?
He was so good to me, especially in the biggest games. Nothing fazes him. He somehow gets out of jams. He's 6'4", not 6 feet. I mean, whatever you say about Tua, you got to think then he's going to be Drew Brees. But he's closer to 6 than 6'1", they say. And he's got some health issues, which nobody could really check out. You know, did you hear that story? Miami was trying to get him to fly in the day before the world shut down, and they just couldn't get him to Miami.
Yeah, I did hear that.
And that's a problem. Now, I think that's why Mel Kiper put him behind Justin Herbert at 6 instead of 5. Although I just heard Dylan say there's, and I don't know what that's based on, that you're right, Washington should take him at 2. Washington should take a quarterback at 2, because if they don't, they're going to have Haskins next year and the year after, and he doesn't strike me remotely as a franchise quarterback. And don't forget, the Giants got incredible grief for drafting Daniel Jones over Haskins, and I'm not saying Daniel Jones is anything either. He's a turnover machine, but he's certainly been better than Haskins, even though Haskins got a little better at the end of the year.
Yeah, he did. And I don't care that he was taking selfies when Case Keenum was out there taking a knee. That's fine. To me, that's funny. I just don't think he's the guy, and I think Tua is. And I think Daniel Snyder, if he's getting involved again, I know he likes Chase Young, which, again, stay out of it, please, Daniel Snyder. You're the worst owner in football, and let Ron Rivera do his thing and the general manager and whatnot. But, Dwayne Haskins isn't Ron Rivera's guy. So he might want to go in a different direction. I don't know. It's going to be interesting. But in terms of the Eagles, I've been reading some things, and some people have gotten into my head a little bit about maybe changing philosophy a little bit. I talk to Marcus Hayes all the time. You listen to the show, Steve, and he talks, and I have always talked about, I think the philosophy should be best player available as relative to need as possible. I still don't pick for need. I take best player available. That's how you load up your team with elite talent. This is an interesting one, though, because they are really hurting at wide receiver, but they also might have a generational linebacker fall into the lap of Kenneth Murray from Oklahoma or Patrick Queen, although I think Patrick Queen will be off the board. And they have no linebackers. I still think they could get a good quality wide receiver at 57 in the second round, maybe. And sometimes you need that anchor. I mean, look at Jordan Hicks when he was healthy. He was a playmaker here. Michael Kendricks was a second-round pick, was a good player here, started for the Super Bowl team. Jeremiah Trotter, when he was here, led that defense. They do not value that position, though, or at least they certainly didn't when Andy Reid was here. But it's something to consider in terms of best player available if they think they can get a wide receiver in the second round. What would you do? What do you think?
I'm still looking at a wide receiver. I mean, you got to give Carson Wentz something besides Zach Ertz. You don't know what's going to happen with Jackson. I think they really have to come out with some weapons. And to me, he's really got one weapon now and an okay running game. I think they might fall flat on their face offensively if they don't get a really good wide receiver. And if Jackson's healthy, that's a big bonus. And then they're really stacked between Ertz and then two wide receivers. But I'm still going wide receiver because I think that's their biggest weakness, unless you tell me Jackson's going to play 16 games, and you're not going to tell me that. In fact, you got to tell me Carson Wentz is going to play 16 games, and I'm not sure you can tell me that. And I understand people say, oh, he made it through the whole regular season, but as we know, when there were playoffs, you play more than 16 games. Now, it might even be a blessing in disguise for some guys, and maybe Carson Wentz is one of them, because the NFL is already talking about maybe playing a shorter season, maybe playing with no fans. You know, the Dr. Fauci guy said, you know, you might be able to play baseball this summer with no fans. So that bodes well for the NFL at least playing a season. But health is always first, and I'll go back to Tua for a second. Health is a big question mark with him, Joe. You might be right. He might be a generational talent, but that doesn't mean he's going to be on the field enough to be a generational quarterback. You don't know. So to me, that's another question mark. If I was Washington, I would draft a quarterback. But I'd be aware of Tua myself, and I'm a big, big Joe Burrow. I think the problem for him is, you know, he's not going to say, Cincinnati, don't draft me, because he's an Ohio guy. But my goodness, I think he's going to be on his back for the next 2 years.
Yeah, I agree. And again, Cincinnati's a place where quarterback careers go to die. You know, it's a shame. He's an Ohio kid, man. But if I was him, I'd hope that Miami would make that move, and Cincinnati would trade that first pick to Miami for a bunch of picks. And Miami's a much better place to play, in my opinion, with their new coach down there, Brian Flores, and the atmosphere and environment he's got working for him down there. It's going to be interesting, certainly. We have a little difference of opinion on the top quarterback.
A rare difference of opinion.
Difference of opinion. That is correct. Now, let's talk a little bit, because I wanted to preview tomorrow night. We'll talk more about this tomorrow night with the Michael Jordan, the documentary coming out.
We're
both going to be watching it. And I was going to do another Mount Rushmore. I think ours are, they mirror each other. I think our Mount Rushmores, because I got Mike in no particular order. I got Mike, I got LeBron, I got Wilt, and I got Oscar. How about you?
I'm totally with you. I'm an Oscar guy up top, but you know, Wilt's the most dominant guy ever. And Jordan and LeBron are the two guys in the last 25 years or whatever it's been, who have really been 30 years, who have really been, in my view, head and shoulders above the rest of the league. You know, I think Kawhi Leonard's been the best player the last couple of years, both ends of the floor. LeBron was unbelievable this year. But, you know, to lead the teams that he left to the finals, and I know everyone's going to say, oh, he lost all those finals with the Cavaliers. But he had some teams who barely should have been playoff teams that he took to the finals. So I think Wilt is the most dominant player of all time. My son will be on your show sometimes, and he'll argue for Wilt or maybe even Kareem, who I would have fifth on that list, by the way. He'd be my alternate if I get one. But I think we do have the same. And, you know, Oscar, people just forget what Oscar was. You know, I assume you've been in it or we'll do it tomorrow, but guy averaged a triple-double his first 5 years in the league. I mean, that's unfathomable then, and to me it's unfathomable now. And that's what nobody rigging rebounds on foul shots for you.
Yeah, I know. I'm totally with you on that. That's just ridiculous. People kind of forget Oscar for some reason. I mean, his numbers are just off the charts. And people talk about Wilt or maybe Kareem. I mean, if you put Kareem on Mount Rushmore, I wouldn't have a problem with it. But again, I think Oscar, what he did, I don't think people know exactly some of the records he set. Or like you said, the first 5 years, if you strung the first five seasons together, he averaged a triple-double.
I mean, it's like video games. It's like he is a video game. And the other stat I'll give you today, I know we'll talk more tomorrow, is for his career, he shot 48.5% from the field, Oscar Robertson. And back then, if you shot 40, that was considered like good.
Yeah.
And so I don't know what that would be today. I don't know if it would improve. But you very rarely find guards who shoot that high a percentage then or even now, even though the shooting percentages are much higher nowadays. So to me, he's a standalone guy. If we're talking complete players, we're talking, you know, points, rebounds, assists. and he's the guy for all three of those. And we'll get into what the assist rule used to be many years ago also, which made it much tougher. He'd average three or four more assists per game for his career if he played today with the exact same production.
I know. Unfortunately, he played for University of Cincinnati and left right before they started winning championships. They won in 61-62, went to the finals in 63. He wasn't a part of that.
Right.
He played on a bad Cincinnati team for most of his career, went to the Bucks, was teamed up with Lou Alcindor,
yeah.
Finally won a championship. In his last season, went to Game 7 against the Celtics. They lost that game, but he did so much for the league, so much for he had the lawsuit, the kind of...
Yeah, he was the plaintiff. He was the president of the Players Association when they sued the NBA, that antitrust suit that frankly eventually led through a few other things to, you know, free agency and everybody making all the crazy money that they make. You know, some of us old timers might think it's gone the other way, Joe, because when you see baseball players signing for, you know, $300-400 million, when you see Kobe or whoever getting $30 million a year, or even the football players now, to me it seems that the pendulum has totally gone the other way. You know, when they booed like Joe DiMaggio when he held out for $40,000, or they booed Drysdale and Koufax when they held out for $100,000 or $125,000, we all agree that was crazy. But now when you have guys making $40 million a year, that strikes me as crazy as well. And if you go to games, and I know you go to games, if you can't get a freebie, you're paying through the nose. You take your family of four to any fill-in-the-blank game, you better have a lot of money. When I was a kid, I went to 30 games in the bleachers with my father. And, you know, nowadays I take my kids to one or two games so they can get the flavor of it all, because it costs a fortune.
Cost a fortune. I don't know how anyone does it, especially, you know, hockey games and
right.
As much as they charge in the food, and it's just ridiculous. Steve, let me just ask you before I let you go, bro. I mean, games without fans, do you see it happening?
I do see it happening, because so much of this stuff is based on TV money, and you still have to have the overriding thing in all of this is safety. And I don't think it's crazy to think that the players will be sitting in the stands in the first couple of rows. You're not going to sit 20 guys together in the dugout. You're not going to sit 10 guys on that little bench in the bullpen. I mean, that's just not going to happen. But, you know, there are still going to be other problems, because I think we talked about it on the podcast. Mike Trout made a statement, my wife is pregnant. So if I'm in Florida or I'm in Arizona and my wife has our first child, you know I'm going. And then what happens when I come back? Am I quarantined for 14 days and I can't play for 2.5 weeks? I mean, there's just all these kinds of little things. These guys are human beings. You know, in the old days, Joe, and I know you know this, guys never their wife was having a baby. Nobody missed a game.
No one missed
a
game.
Are you kidding me?
No one missed a game.
And then again, correctly, in the last 20, 25 years, you know, it used that, and the early guys got criticized for leaving. But now, obviously, family is more important than anything. It should have been back then, but it wasn't, frankly. And, you know, maybe those guys needed to get paid, or the guy would have, you know, fined them or something. But now it's a different world. All these guys are millionaires, virtually, not all, but virtually all these guys are millionaires. And, of course, they want to be when their child is born, especially your first one. And if Mike Trout is talking about anything, you have to listen, because, as you know, the commissioner criticized him for not speaking out enough about himself. He just wants to, like Tim Duncan we talked about, he wants to play hard, kick your butt, win the game, and go home.
Go home, yeah. He doesn't want to fool around with the other stuff. He just wants to get out of there. You know, there's some players that just go about their business with their lunch pails and their hard hats, and certainly Mike Trout's one of them. Steven, great job. Appreciate it, man. We'll see you tomorrow night at 10 after 6, correct?
Correct. Always a pleasure, Joe.
You too, pal. We'll talk to you soon. Steve Callis on the Comcast Business Hotline. Got to take a break. We're a little late. Mike from Wegmans, my man. Hang in there, brother. We'll talk about two on the other side. We'll also do the draft simulator for anyone who wants to call in. Having fun with that tonight. I'm Joe Stazak. I'm here till 10 o'clock tonight.
97.5 The Fanatic.
All right, welcome back. Joe Stazak here. It's 9:30. I'm here till 10 o'clock tonight. Back tomorrow at 4 o'clock. Steve Collins was on the previous side clearing some things up for us. We're going to talk more about the Michael Jordan documentary tomorrow night in Mount Rushmore. Steve Collins and I agree on who the top four players of all time are. You can make some arguments for some other guys. would engage you. I could maybe be convinced that maybe Kareem Abdul-Jabbar should be in there. I don't think Kobe's a top four. I think he may be a top five. But again, my Mount Rushmore is Mike, LeBron, Wilt, and Oscar Robertson. It doesn't get enough credit. I don't think people know enough about Oscar Robertson. He played on some bad teams until he got to Milwaukee, and he played with Lou Alcindor, who became Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, finally won a championship. Didn't win one with Cincinnati. He played for the University of Cincinnati, the Bearcats. They won in 61-62 and went to the finals in 63. He left right before the 61 season, so he had some trouble winning championships until he won one with Milwaukee finally, and his last game was Game 7, lost against the Celtics in the finals. But again, if you strung his first five seasons together, he averaged a triple-double for the first five seasons. That's ridiculous. Seriously? 12-time All-Star, 11-time All-NBA, one-time MVP, 181 triple-doubles. 181 triple-doubles. His second year, he averaged a triple-double. In his 10 years in Cincinnati, he averaged just about 30 points a game. His numbers went down a little bit when he went to Milwaukee in his last 4 years, but my goodness, a beast. Talk about a beast. Hey, let's go to my man Mike from Wegmans. You're on 97.5 The Fanatic. What's up, Michael?
Hey, Joe, how you doing tonight?
Good, buddy. How you doing?
I'm good. You had that generational talent intro lined up for Steve. I thought you were coming to me, but I'll take the beast intro, I guess.
Sorry, bro. How you doing, man?
I'm good, thanks. I'm just heading home from work. Now you got me thinking Redskins, so I figured I'd just give my 2 cents on that first.
Yeah, please do.
I think you're right with Tua. I think that's who they should take, but I think you mentioned Daniel Snyder, and I don't think he's going to do the right thing.
No, so he's a dope.
It's hard to knock a Chase Young pick because he also seems like such a great talent, but I think they're going to mess it up. I don't think they pick Tua. I think that admitting they're wrong if they pick Tua with Dwayne Haskins, I don't think they're going to do that yet.
They're not. I don't think so. It's possible they could surprise me again. They have a new coach in Ron Rivera. Dwayne Haskins wasn't his pick. I mean, he may not like Dwayne Haskins. I know he brought Allen with him over from Carolina, but if you need a franchise quarterback, it's much more important to land your franchise quarterback than a dominant edge rusher. Very nice to have a dominant edge rusher. But your quarterback, he touches the ball every play. He's the most important position in all of sports. And I think Tua's the guy. You know, if Tua goes first, which he won't, to Cincinnati, then Joe Burrow's your guy. But if I was Washington, I would seriously reconsider taking Chase Young at number two.
Yeah, I agree. I think Burrow's and Tua are kind of can't miss picks right now, so I think you got to pick whoever's there, which will be Tua, but I just don't think they'll get it. For the Eagles, I can't go through another year with no receivers and having a former Houston quarterback as our only reliable option besides tight end. So I need to go receiver. I know you mentioned not reaching or just drafting for a position in need, but I can't have deja vu all over again and watch Carson drop back with nobody reliable to throw the ball to.
He's had nothing to throw to. Last year was awful, except for game one. Hey, let's play the draft simulator. You want to play, Mike?
Sure. Sounds good.
Do you know how to play? Have you been listening?
Yeah, I think I get it.
All right. And hang on. I want to ask you a Wegmans question in a second. Go ahead, Dylan. Do the thing.
Okay, so a note before I say who's available. At pick number 20 in this simulation went CeeDee Lamb. The Vikings jumped the Eagles to take CeeDee Lamb. So that,
oh boy,
you'd have Eagles fans rioting in the streets, quarantine or no quarantine if that happened. But the players you have available to you, the top four wide receivers are gone. Actually, top five. Mims is gone too. So Rager is listed as the best wide receiver still available. Kenneth Murray and Patrick Queen are both there, and CJ Henderson is gone, but the other corners are still there, besides for Okuda, who's obviously going really high. But Rager, Ayuk, and those wide receivers are still there, but Mims, Ruggs, Lamb, Judy, and Jefferson all gone.
Oh, boy. Well, that's a nightmare, but I guess I'd probably go with Quinn or Murray. I guess I'd pick a linebacker just with the top receivers gone, and then maybe move up in round two to get another receiver I like to make sure I still get somebody. So I'll go with Quinn.
All right, see, I like that. If he's available, I like that. I like that. All right, Mike, tell me, what's the deal on Sunday mornings at Wegmans? Is there a wait to get in? Is there, like, one in, one out, like some of the clubs, like in Miami? How's it work?
Yeah, it is kind of like a club. There's definitely going to be a wait almost any time you go, just to make sure that it's, you know, either way, if you're waiting outside, that wait before was just going to be inside, you know, so you're almost just waiting in a different spot where you can spread out. The best time to go that I've seen is Sunday afternoon. You know, everyone used to go on Sunday afternoons, they're off from work, and now you can go on a Tuesday, you're off from work. So Sunday afternoons are probably the best bet. Sunday mornings are pretty busy, a little bit still.
Yeah, there was like 50 deep around the corner last weekend when my wife went. I usually go at night. I know a lot of things are gone at night, but there's not a lot of folks there. And
that's the way to go.
Yeah, you guys do a phenomenal job. Keep it up, Mike. Appreciate it, pal. Great talking to you.
Have a good night.
Talk to you soon, Mike. Yep, you too. That was Mike from Wegmans. Hooked me up one time when I lost my keys and my wallet and... good dude, works for the Wegmans in Malvern. Yeah, in the morning, on Sunday mornings, my wife went last week. I've never had an issue. I just walk in and do my thing and wash my hands and usually go to the self-checkout, but not always. I got yelled at last week because I crossed a line. The cashier stand, now they have sneeze guards they put up. Between the cashier and the person in line. So they're doing a good job trying to protect, trying to keep people safe and healthy. I think the total is 153,000 people have now died worldwide from the coronavirus. Von Miller now has it of the Broncos. I think he's symptom-free, but it is in his system. So I think it's going to be a while, guys. I think this whole quarantine thing, first of all, is going to be another 2 weeks at least. It's not ending April 30th. They're going to take it 2 weeks at a time. It's going to go May 15th and May 31st, and it's into Memorial Day. You know, the economy at the shore is just going to tank. You know, what's going to happen? People aren't getting their houses, and there's no economy getting flowing into the for the locals down at the shore scenes, and it's a mess. The whole thing's a mess, and I don't see it clearing up anytime soon. I can't see it in a month saying, all right, now we're all going back to games and we're all going to be in the same room, and that's ridiculous. It's going to be a while, because if we do start getting a hold of it, and I think we've kind of stemmed the tide a little bit, but all it takes is, you know, people getting together again and the thing to start multiplying exponentially, and then it gets to be a mess again. And then we have to go through the whole thing again. So I think it's going to be a while. I think it's going to affect the football season. Baseball's in jeopardy. I do not think basketball or hockey will see the completion of their seasons this year, unfortunately. I would love to have seen the Flyers in action in the postseason. They were doing so well. Sixers, yeah, I just out of curiosity would have liked to have seen what they would have pulled off or tried to pull off with that dysfunctional team. But the Flyers were cruising. You know, and even if it started up again, you know, you break that momentum. Guys got to get back in shape. It's not just going to be like, all right, let's start. Well, next week we'll start the season again. No, you got to have like training camps again. And, you know, once you're out of hockey shape, man, that takes a while to get back into hockey shape. Real hockey shape, especially the shape the Flyers are in. With Elaine Vigneault and the way he runs his ship. Yeah, that's... I'm sorry. It's a shame, but we're not going to see sports around here for a while, I don't think. We may see sports without fans. That may come into play. I'd still do it. I'd be into it. I hear people saying, who wants to do that? It's no fun. I'd still rather watch a game than watch, you know, tonight I was prepping. I'm watching the Kings and Devils game 6 of the Stanley Cup Finals in 2012. That's what I was watching. Now, I'm a Kings fan. So not before the Flyers, but second to the Flyers. So I was big.
They beat the Devils in six. They had a 3-0 lead. Devils win the next two. Marty Brodeur was terrible in game six. I only watched the till the end of the first period, and I bolted. They won in 2014 as well, beating the Rangers in 5 games. Alec Martinez with the overtime goal against Henrik Lundqvist. Anyway, I mean, everyone's replaying games and watching Nova games and Virginia and North Carolina State. And now we're watching, what was on today? Oh, Phillies and Cubs from August 15th of last year when Bryce Harper hit the Grand Slam when they swept the Cubs that weekend.
That was sick.
Yeah, good stuff. By the way, today, this day in history, April 18th, 1987. Maybe Dylan can grab the sound from this. We'll get it on the other side. Mike Schmidt's 500th home run against the Pirates. Michael Jack Schmidt hit number 500, 1987, April 18th. Got to take another break. If you want to play our virtual draft simulator, please give me a call, 610-632-0975. I'm Joe Stazak. Coming right back.
97.5, The Fanatic. The Fanatic.
Here's the stretch by Robinson. The 3-0 pitch.
Swing a long drive. There it is. Number 500. The career 500th home run for Michael Jack Schmidt. And the Phillies have regained the lead at Pittsburgh. 8-6. And the Phillies dugout comes swarming out to home plate.
All right, we're back. That was Harry Cowles, Harry the K, with his call of Michael Jack Schmidt's 500th home run against the Pirates back in April of 1987. What is that? That's about 13. That's 33 years ago. Wow. 33 years ago. That's crazy. Michael Jack Schmidt, he was one that anytime he was up, you'd stop. Like, if the game's on in the background, you're walking around doing stuff around the house, and when he was up, you would stop and watch the at-bat. Same thing with Bryce Harper. You watch the at-bat. You're looking for a home run. He had that sweet swing, step into it, break the wrists, level swing. Ball would explode off his bat, 548 career home runs. He was something else to watch. What was his famous quote? Philadelphia is the only place where you can experience the thrill of victory and the agony of reading about it the next day. He was not a big fan of the press. Not a big fan of the press and the media. He came out with a wig that one time out of the dugout. I love Michael Jack. Still part of the organization. Still does some radio once in a while. Television. Still looking good. Best third baseman of all time. Thank you very much. What a team that was. See, I like that era a little better than the 2008 era, to be honest. I mean, they won the same amount of championships. I just, for some reason, I thought that team was a little more talented. I don't know. It's hard to explain why I just thought man for man, they were more talented with that team, with the Manny Trios and the Larry Boas, the Mike Schmidt, Gary Maddox, Bake McBride, Greg Luzinski, Bob Boone, Steve Carlton, Tug McGraw. I like that era of Phillies baseball. It went to 3 straight NLCSs. Lost to the Reds, the big red machine, and then the Dodgers twice, and took a year off while the Pirates came back from 3-1 down to the Orioles to win the championship in 79. The family, remember the family? We are family. And then the Phils came back and won it in 80 with that crazy 5-game win over Houston. And then they took down the Kansas City Royals in 6 games. Mike Schmidt World Series MVP. So there's still time to play the draft simulator if you want. Hey, do one up for me again, Dylan. Can you do one for me right now, bro? You do it. Do another one for me. I'll give you another pick. I took Jerry Jeudy earlier because he was available somehow.
Yes, I have another one run. This time there is no Jerry Jeudy available.
I didn't think so.
You do have Justin Jefferson there. You have Denzel Mims. Looks like only the first three, the main three wide receivers were taken. I do not see Kenneth Murray. No, Kenneth Murray went to the Dolphins at pick 18. So
where's Patrick Queen?
He is still on the board.
Done.
There you go.
That's my guy.
That's four for Queen.
It's four for Queen? If really?
Queen's the only one who got drafted more than once. Three wide receivers were taken.
Okay.
Queen was available every single time, though. So
that's weird. I don't think he's... I think he goes ahead of Murray. But who knows? You know, who knows? Who's on... You never know whose board looks like, you know, whatever it looks like. I think it's going to be interesting. And this is the kind of draft that hurts, like Bill Belichick, who loves to wheel and deal on draft day because of the logistics of the whole situation. How difficult it might be to communicate with other teams as quickly as you'd like to, as you have been able to in past years. I think, if anything, it hurts teams like the Patriots and Bill Belichick. There's also talk that Detroit might be shopping that third pick. Matt Patricia, former Belichickian. You know, the Patriots are looking for a significant impact quarterback in this draft, from what I hear. Obviously, they'd get one if they traded for the third pick. They have a bunch of picks. I don't know if it's going to be attractive enough to lure the third pick away from the Detroit Lions. I don't know who you'd have to throw in that mix, because the Patriots are selecting in the mid-20s. They would need, you need another first-round pick at least, and that's, I mean, maybe next year it'll be better, because the Patriots, I don't think, are going to be good. They're over-under. Vegas has them at 8.5 wins, and I'm saying under. I think they have a tough schedule. I think they're not the beasts of the East anymore. I think Jared Stidham, if he's the quarterback, I know Belichick won 11 games with Matt Castle. Probably his most proud accomplishment was that season, winning 11 games with Matt Castle and still not making the playoffs that year, believe it or not, the year Brady got hurt. But I don't know. Beware of the Patriots. When Bill Belichick calls, hang up the phone. You're about to get raped. You're about to get raped. But again, this year it's going to be a little bit more difficult. I know they're practicing and they have, Microsoft Team or whatever it is, and they're going through logistics, and they have 10 minutes now in the first round. It's going to be different, to say the least. Still have time to get your pick in, and if worse comes to worse and everything breaks down, you just text the commissioner the pick. Should not be a problem. But it's going to be different. I wonder how ESPN's going to cover it. Is ESPN covering it? I would think so. They're contractually bound to cover it. But I don't know if they're going to have four across like they usually do. Right now, their anchors sit about 8 feet from each other.
I guess they could all have them all in separate boxes. So.
Yeah, like they've been doing with First Things First and First Take, Get Up, all those shows. And even Sportsnet. Is it Sportsnet still? NBC Sports Philadelphia? I don't know. They're doing it like Amy Fadul's at her own house. Danny Pamels is at his own house. They only do like three or four stories. So it's different. And I'm disappointed they don't do weekends, because I'd still like to hear, you know, how they're covered. I mean, things are still going on. Things are still happening. Not a whole lot, but there are some things happening. And we'll be here to cover it this Thursday. The draft begins, round one. Looking forward to it, see what the Eagles do. They have it's an important draft for the Birds, to say the least. I'm not saying anything anyone doesn't know. It's huge, because I think they're in a semi-rebuilding type situation. Les Bowen will be with us tomorrow at 5:10, Steve Callis at 6:10. So we look forward to seeing you all tomorrow.
Do you want the final results of our
game? Yes, I do. I would love the final results.
Okay, so we had 7 different people pick. You picked twice and 5 other people picked. You picked Jerry Jeudy the first time, and then you got Patrick Queen. I think it was Dave from Center City who took Denzel Mims. There was 4 Patrick Queen picks. He was the overwhelming winner, but he was also available every time. And a lot of these other wide receivers weren't. Most of the times, the first 4 wide receivers were gone when the Eagles were on the board. So that doesn't bode well for the Eagles. But Jeudy got picked once. Justin Jefferson got picked once. And Denzel Mims got picked once. Henry Ruggs never fell to them. CeeDee Lamb never fell to them. So he almost made it the one time. He made it to 20. And then the Vikings jumped them. Gave up a 3rd-round pick to get ahead of them.
Wow.
So, yeah.
All right. Good stuff. Thanks, brother.
Now, I'm with you again tomorrow night, so we could always continue this.
We'll continue the simulation. I love it.
Get a better, more complete result.
Okay, great stuff. Yeah, we'll add in these numbers, and we'll give a final result at the end of tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. Appreciate it, pal. Thanks for listening, everyone. You can follow me on Twitter at JoeStazak975. Thanks to Steve Callis for calling in. Les Bowen on tomorrow. Steve Callis on once again at 6:10. Hope you all have a great night. Enjoy yourself. Stay healthy. Good luck the rest of the way. And I will talk to you tomorrow. I am out. Late.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top 5 Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.